I'd like to introduce our speaker, Dudley. I met him in a home group about 7 months ago. And every time he would share, it was just, I got so much out of it. He was just, he has a lot to give to a lot of people, and he does give a lot to a lot of people. And he's there for people when they need him. He's been there for me. And I think he's a very remarkable person.
Thank you, Pat. Make me cry. You know? That's great. Thank you for your introduction. To the people at the Ridgeview Alumni Association, thank you for inviting me. And for all my East Cobb friends, all my friends that are members of my home group, a lot of you came. Gave me support. Those are the people that keep me sober one day at a time, and I appreciate it. I think all these years I thought you guys didn't like me, and but I love you. I love you guys, and I'm glad you're here. Special thank you. I have a friend of mine that we go back a long, long time, and it's Mike Eller and his wife, Diane, and Mike started a lot of meetings out there where we go today, and he's a special friend of mine. And to all of you other people, I'm honored to be with you tonight. I'm deeply honored to be with you. You know, I was a patient here in 1985, and the wheel had run off in my life. And I met a guy here by the name of Bernard S. Carter. And I don't know if any of you remember Bernard, but that was a long, long time ago. But he was a counselor here, and he was a wonderful man, and he touched my life. He touched my wife's life. He was the kind of guy you meet, you never forget. And I'd been here about 2 weeks, and he comes up to me, and he put a little bitty guy, but he put his arm around me, and he said, "Dudley, I want you to listen to this." He said, "Dudley, your life doesn't have to be the way it used to be anymore. And that's a promise." And that's the message of hope I want to share tonight. Especially if you're a newcomer. That your life doesn't have to be the way it used to be anymore. One of my favorite parts of the big book is right at the very beginning. And it says, "We of Alcoholics Anonymous are people who normally would not mix, that we come from different backgrounds, different ethnic backgrounds, different geographical backgrounds and economic backgrounds and social backgrounds, but there exists among us, that's you and me, a friendliness, a fellowship, and an understanding, which is indescribably wonderful." Isn't that amazing? That's what we're all about. You know what that means? The minute we walk through the door, we never have to be alone again. Never, ever, ever have to be alone again. Isn't that amazing for an alcoholic? It's amazing for an alcoholic. You know, tonight I am to tell you a little bit about me, what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like tonight. And I know you can't tell it, but I'm a Georgia farm boy. I grew up about 45, 50 minutes west of here, grew up on a farm, and we worked hard, and we didn't have much except a lot of love in our family. I think back, and I think we might have been poor, but I didn't know it, and I'm glad I didn't know it at the time, you know, but we didn't have a lot of money, but I had a great mom and a great dad, a great mom and a great dad. My mother is 88 years old. She's still living. And up until the last year, she was in great health. And worked 2 days a week at the hospital as a volunteer. And now her health is going down. My dad died in 1985, the same year I was at Ridgeview. But, you know, when I hear people talk, a lot of people came from broken homes. Dad was an alcoholic. Mother was an alcoholic. No drinking ever in my family. My mom and dad were the two of the most spiritual people I've ever known. We went to a little country church, and if the doors of that church were open, we were there. And Dudley was with them. We sang those great songs, Marcy, like Amazing Grace and A Love Lifted Me, and you never hear those anymore. But that's exactly what happened to me. Love lifted me when I came into these rooms. And it is by the amazing grace of God that I'm sober tonight, you know. So those songs that I sang as a kid, they're true in my life today. But anyway, my childhood, you know, I grew up, we worked hard. You know, I mean, we worked real hard and on the farm. And I don't think we had a TV. I can't even remember. Maybe 12, 13 years old, we didn't have a TV. We worked. And I remember my dad would wake me up on Saturday mornings, and he said, well, we're going to go out in the pasture and move the rocks. We'd go out in the pasture and move the rocks. And then the next Saturday, he said, well, we're going to go out in the pasture and move the rocks. Hell, we'd move the rocks back to where they were before. I don't. But you know what I think? I think it was just a chance for us to be together. We used to go fishing and hunting, and he was a wonderful dad. I remember, let me tell you what I was like. And I just have figured it out. And by the way, my sobriety date is February the 12th of 1990. So I've been sober about 13 and a half years. Just today I'm figuring out a lot of things, you know. But I remember a few years ago, there was a movie. The name of it was As Bill Sees It. Some of you saw it. I remember that Bill Wilson is talking to his wife, and he's in the parlor. That's what they called it in those days, the parlor. He's looking out over the street, and he sees people walking and sees people talking, and he tells his wife, he said, Lois, he said, look at those people. He said, look how they walk. He said, look how they, listen to how they laugh. And he said, they look so at ease. And he turns around to his wife and he said, you know, Lois, I've never been at ease in my life. That, to me, explains me. Never was at ease, you know. I was always quick, even as a child, I was always quick to boredom. And I always wanted to be somebody else, and I always wanted to be somewhere else, you know. Anybody understand? I went to school, and even if you live on a farm, you still got to go to school, you know. So I went to school, and I became, in high school, I became in those days, a big-time high school football player. And the reason being is because you grow up on the farm, you learn to be, you're a tough guy, So, you know, the game suited me. I was tough. I was strong. So I became a big-time high school football player in that little town, you know. As a matter of fact, I met a guy the other day I had not seen since 1966. The guy looked 80 years old. He was my age. I went to a mirror immediately. I said, God, why do I look that old? The guy had white hair. So I'm walking down this store and he yells at me. He said, Dudley Harper. So I go there, and he says, do you remember me? And I said, no. He said, well, I graduated from high school with you. So I remembered his name. We only had 40-something people in our class. So I remembered him, and he said, you know what I remember about you? He said, I remember that you were a great football player and always dated the best-looking girls, you know? So, you know, I left that store, and I was thinking, I wonder why that's all he remembers about me. And then I got to thinking, that's all it was for me. That's all I was. I was a football player that dated a bunch of pretty girls. You know, that was it. I dated them long enough till they found out what I was like. Then, you know, then it booted me out. But anyway, a lot of people started drinking early age. I never had a drink until I was 17 years old. I was a health freak, workout freak. Worked out every single day. I wouldn't put a thing in my body that I thought would hurt my body. A workout freak. So anyway, I also took up Golden Glove boxing. So I boxed for 3 or 4 years, and the reason I did that is that when my football playing days were over, I missed the roar of the crowd. You know, the miss the roar of the crowd. Somebody understand that? I missed the roar of the crowd. So I did that for 3 or 4 years. And so anyway, I never had a drink till I was 17 years old, and I had one drink on my junior, senior prom. And I hated it. And I hear a lot of people in these rooms say they knew they were alcoholic right from the get-go, you know. I hated it. I absolutely hated it. As a matter of fact, I couldn't finish the beer. I could not finish a beer. And I remember walking around the corner and pouring half my beer out, you know, because I couldn't finish it. I'm 17 years old. When I'm 37 years old, I'm walking around the corner pouring a shot in my drink because I don't want you to know how much I'm drinking. You know, that's what alcohol did for me. Time I was 17 till I was 37 years old. But anyway, I finally got out of high school, and I went to college, and I finally got out of college, and I didn't do a whole lot of drinking. Every once in a while, you know, I'd drink. I'd get messed up, but I never thought it was a problem. 1966, I got married to the most beautiful girl in my hometown, and she's the mother of my daughter. I got in the clothing business. In the town where I grew up was big. They made a lot of men's suits. And when I was growing up, I'd see all these salesmen. And they always had big tans, great tans, and drove big Cadillacs. And I said, that's exactly what I want to be. And they worked about 12 weeks a year. And that's exactly what I want to be, you know. So I got in the ladies' clothing, in the men's clothing business initially, and was traveling all over the place. So anyway, we got married. In 1968, we had our daughter, Marnie, and we had a great life. You know, I had a great job. We had a two-car garage, fenced-in backyard. We had a beagle and two cars in the garage. But when I was traveling, initially for me, what I did is I used to be out on the road, and then at night, I'd do my paperwork and watch TV and go to bed. If you travel, it gets real lonely, you know, and I was traveling every week, and so I decided, you know, that what I'll do is I will go to the bar, you know, have a few pops or meet some people and relax, and I started doing that, and first thing you know, and it didn't take long, I mean, I'm closing the bars down, you know, I'm going in at 6, 7 o'clock, and I'm there at 1 or 2 o'clock, and it just got worse and worse, and this is one thing I remember. I used to, on Friday afternoon, Fridays, you know, if you're a salesman, you usually try to plan your week so you can get back into town at 3 or 4 o'clock and have a long weekend with your family. And I remember I got where I would come back into Atlanta, and I'd stop at a neighborhood bar. And Marnie was a real, you know, she was real small. And I'd stay in there at 9 or 10 o'clock drinking, you know, and I remember driving out of there one night, and I said, gee, this is not right. I mean, I should be rushing home to be with my family, especially with my small daughter, you know. But anyway, it got worse and worse and worse, and I did all those things that comes with the booze. A lot of my story does not make good telling at an AA meeting, you know, and that's the reason I have a sponsor. And so I don't want to go into all the gory details, but it tells me in a general way I need to tell you. So anyway, I did all the stuff that comes with the drinking. And so in 1973, my wife, and she's blessed, she got tired of me. And so she told me that, you know, I remember her telling me that I was sitting on the front steps of our house, and she said, you know, I want a divorce. A lot of violence with me. And I wanted a divorce, and she said, I think you're crazy. I think you're an alcoholic. You're crazy. You know, I didn't mind her thinking I was crazy. I just hated when she said she thought I was an alcoholic, though. But anyway, you know, I remember laughing because I was thinking, how in the world can somebody like that, you know, leave me? You know, I've got a great job. I was captain of the football team back in Bremen, Georgia, 1961. I mean, how can somebody leave me? But the laughing stopped on September 16th of 1973, and because that's when our divorce was final, and my world as I knew it ended. And it killed me, absolutely killed me. And Marnie was about 3.5 years old. We had a great, you know, we had a great relationship, and I moved into the darkest damn apartment you ever want to see in your life. You know, I stayed in a motel for 6 weeks, thinking we'll be able to put this thing back together, and but we didn't. And but anyway, I got an apartment, and it had windows, but evidently the light wouldn't get in there or something. But that was the darkest place. I'd put lamps. And but it was still just so dark, you know, just a depressing place. And I used to play sad records and get a fifth of scotch and sit on the floor and drink that scotch and listen to country music and cry. And so I got to thinking, Dudley, this is not good for you. You'll go insane doing this. You need to go out to the bars and meet somebody. And so I got to doing the bar scene, you know, and it was horrible, just tore me up. You know, getting in 12, 1, you know, every night, and getting in all kinds of trouble. And, but anyway, about this time, sometime, I decided I had some friends of mine who were in the ladies' clothing business. I was in the men's clothing business, and it was a little wilder, and you meet a lot of women, and they got drugs and a lot of alcohol. I said, that's for me. So I got into that, and, it was crazy, absolutely crazy. My drinking, it was an every night deal. And somewhere along the line, I discovered morning drinking. And I'd always wanted to avoid that, because I thought that really pinpointed you as being an alcoholic, you know? So, one day I'm fishing. This buddy and I go fishing, and I'd been out late. He said, man, you look like hell, you know, and I said, boy, I feel horrible. And he said, I have a cooler full of beer. He said, get you one of those, it'll make you feel better. So I did, and immediately, it was magic. You guys know, because I can tell the way you're doing it. But it was magic. And so... you know what? I couldn't wait till the next morning. Could not wait till the next morning to get to try that again. So anyway, you know, I never could get off that deal, you know. So basically, my last years of drinking, I drank every minute, every single minute of every single day I was awake. My wife shakes her head. She can confirm that, you know. But in 1977, if I miss these dates, my wife killed me. Hey, I forgot to mention this, guys. My family is here with me tonight. I have my two daughters, my youngest one, Ashley, my oldest one is Marnie, and my wife, Beth. And they have been a big, big part of my sobriety. And I didn't mean to miss them, but I just was so nervous when I got up here, you know. But anyway, they're a big part of my sobriety. And you know what? I love my family. We fight like cats and dogs. We had, it took them 4.5 hours to get ready to come over here tonight. I'm raising hell. You know, but I love my family. And Marnie drove all the way from Athens in this traffic to get down to be with Dad tonight. And another two things I want to mention is I have two grandchildren. The love of my life, and there's Riley and Rainey, and they're 4 years old and 2 years old, and I'm Poppy, and Beth is Mimi, and they're in Michigan visiting another granddad, but they come to see us about once a month, run our ass crazy, and we love every minute of it, and when we take them home, we say, oh, God, great. And when we get back to the house, we say, oh, God, we miss those kids so much, you know. But we love them so much. But in 1977, I'm at the Atlanta Apparel Mart. I have an office there. And I'm walking, and I have this buddy of mine. His name is Lee Brower. He was 6'3", weighed 123 pounds. And we called him Shaky. Shaky Bauer. And he just shook all the time. And he was a big drinker just like me. A big drinker. And but anyway, we traveled together a lot. And so we're walking down the corridor to the Apparel Mart one day. And I look over to the showroom and I see this petite, dark-haired young lady in there sitting at a desk. And I tell Lee, I said, Lee, I said, you see that girl over there? He looks over, he said, yeah. I said, I'm going to marry her. He said, you know her? And I said, no. I said, I never met her before in my life. And that's my wife. I mean, we ended up, she's from New York, and her company had sent her down to work the apparel show. And see, I always wanted something a little different. So she's a little New York girl. I'm a farm boy from Georgia. She's a little Jewish. I'm Methodist. And I thought, hell, that's different. So we did a long distance romance. Then her company sent her down, and so we ended up getting married in 1978. And been ups and downs, ups and downs. You understand? A lot of you guys are married. And it's tough being married to an alcoholic. Tough being married to an alcoholic. 1978, she tells me, I'd gone crazy one night. And she said, Dudley, you're an alcoholic and you need help. And so she called Alcoholics Anonymous. And she went to my first meeting with me and went to a deal called New Hope, a group called New Hope. And that's a great name, New Hope, you know. And so I went there for about, I don't ever remember getting a chip, but I think I went 3 or 4 weeks. Only one night, you know, on a Tuesday night, I remember that, and I didn't drink. And I remember I got to feeling a lot better. But I don't remember anybody ever telling me anything about going to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I don't remember anybody ever telling me, maybe they did, to get a sponsor. All I know is a bunch of old men sitting around. And nobody ever laughed. Nobody ever smiled. And they said, if you want what we have. And I'm thinking, I'm thinking, my God. But anyway, that's the reason I think today in an AA meeting, laughter is real important. It keeps people coming back, you know? And this is real important, especially for a newcomer. I met this guy at the meeting. And so one night he said, how you doing, kid? I said, I'm doing great. And I said, I got where I can go back to the bars where my buddies are. And I can sit there and I can drink club soda with lime. And it doesn't bother me at all. And he said, that's great, kid. But he said, you know what? And listen to this, if you're a newcomer. He said, you're like a piece of paper in a forest fire. That's all he said. A few weeks later, I'm at the bar. And I told everybody in the bar, I'm at Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. Everybody. Even the guys I'm drinking with. I'm drinking club soda and they're drinking beers. I'm trying to get them to come to me for meetings. And so anyway, this lady, the bartender, says, Dudley, she says, club soda with lime. And I says, no. I said, I want a Miller Lite and what it was then. And she said, are you sure? And I said, I'm sure. And I drank for 12 more years after that because I was sure. You know, I was like a piece of paper in a forest fire. You know what the lesson is? When I was at Ridgeview, they said, you got to change your playgrounds and your playmates. Remember them saying that? Got to change your playgrounds and your playmates. And I couldn't do it because I thought those people were the only friends I would ever have in my life, you know? Got to change your playgrounds and your playmates. Like a piece of paper in a forest fire. Does it make sense now? 13 and a half years later, it makes a lot of sense, you know? Didn't make any sense at the time. So anyway, my drinking, I mean, I don't even know how you describe it. It was horrible. But anyway, in 1985, I come here. And, I mean, it was a wonderful thing. I didn't get sober till 1990. It has nothing to do with Ridgeview. I highly recommend. I see people coming out every day at our meetings. You guys are doing great. But I didn't get it. I didn't get it. I tell you this, the seeds were planted. The seeds were planted. And by the way, from 1978 to 1990, and I drank 1 million gallons, I never had one good drink again after I went to an AA meeting. Not one single good drink. Never another good drink. But I had a lot of them. But anyway, I was going to, from 1985 to 1990, I became, and this is the worst kind of a drunk in my opinion, I became a binge drinker. You know what a binge drinker is? And that's where what I would do is I'd be able to go a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, month, 3 months, 6 months one time. I'd go to AA meetings, and then the wheel would run off, and I'd go to a motel room because it was real unpopular after we spent all this money for Ridgeview to drink at my house. So I'd just go get motel rooms and be there for a week at a time, you know, never call home. And Ashley was small but just, you know, just drunk. I'd drink 4 hours. My tolerance had gone down so much. I'd drink 4 hours, pass out 4 hours. You know that deal? Any guys ever been on that deal? It's a horrible way to live. But anyway, I'll tell you what I'm grateful for. I don't know how many white chips I have, maybe 50, maybe 100, I don't know, a lot of them. And sometimes I hate to mention that I was a chronic relapser because I'm afraid that somebody will say, well, gee, Dudley did it and he made it back. So, hell, I probably can do it. I probably make it back, but you may not. You may not. Plus the misery you have to go through. But I met a guy, I was coming to these meetings, I'll tell you this in a little bit. But anyway, I was in and out of these rooms, and the thing I'm grateful for is I'd pick up a white chip again. And these old timers that come up to me and they'd give me a big hug, and they'd say, this is real important. They said, Dudley, keep coming back because we love you and we need you. They said, Dudley, keep coming back because we love you and we need you. What if they said, Dudley, you're a failure. You're a failure. We don't need you. You're taking up time. You're taking up space. See, I'd be under a bridge. I'd be pushing up tulips today. But said, Dudley, keep coming back because we love you. I love those guys. And they're all gone today. Most of them are gone. But I love them for saying that to me. And that's the reason when I see a newcomer or I see somebody that's having a tough time getting connected, I want them to know I love them and I've been there and I understand. In 1985, my dad died. And he was a wonderful man. And I got a call one morning about 8 o'clock from my brother, and I was already drinking. And he said, Dad's had a massive stroke. He said, you know, they told us to bring the family in, you know. I said, I'll be right down. I'm about 1 hour and 15 minutes from my house to my mother and dad's house. And I ended up getting there about 2 or 3 in the afternoon because I had to drink some. I had to stop by the bar and tell my buddies where I'm going. So I get there and I go in. My dad's in intensive care and he's got all these tubes down. So you can only be in there 15 minutes of time. So I go in and see my dad, and he's in a coma. But I sat there and I promised my dad. I said, Dad, because my dad had talked to me about my drinking before. And he said, Dudley, I want you to know that Mother and I pray for you every night, and that one day that God will take that booze away from you, you know. So I said, well, Dad, you don't have to worry about that because I'm fine, you know, but I wasn't fine. But anyway, I go in and see my dad, and I promised my dad. I said, Dad, I promise you, I'll never have another drink. I'll never have another drink. It's it. And my 15 minutes was over, and I walk out of that room, walk out of the steps to the hospital, and go to the first liquor store right down the road on the right, you know. I just promised my dad, you know. The next morning, I told my mother, I said, Mother, I got to come to Atlanta. I got to get some clothes. I'm going to come back and stay with you. My brother, I have a younger brother. My mother was staying at the hospital. I said, I'll be back in 2 or 3 hours. And of course, I didn't make it back. Next morning, I get a call. And my brother called me and said, Daddy's dead. Daddy's dead, you know. And so you need to come down. We need to pick out make all the arrangements. And I go down, and I'm drinking, and I'm feeling so bad. And we had a choice of having the funeral. It was a small town, and it had 2 or 3 people die. And we could have had it at 10 o'clock in the morning or 4 in the afternoon. And I remember I said, Mother, let's have it at 10 o'clock in the morning. And she said, no, because a lot of people would be coming from out of town. It would be just too hard on us to have it 4. You know why I wanted that? Because I didn't think I could make it to 4 o'clock. And I wanted to be sober when I buried my dad. And you know what I was? I was shaking on the inside so bad. All I could think of was, when is this preacher going to get over so I can get a drink, you know? Isn't that amazing? That's what alcohol did to me. So anyway, it doesn't get any better. But I had about 6 months sobriety, and this is the start of my last drink. This is when alcohol killed me. I think alcohol killed me on February the 12th of 1990. I think alcohol finally killed me. But anyway, I had about 6 months sobriety, and I got a big appointment over in Birmingham, Alabama, and I had a lot of anxiety and a lot of fear, and God, I said, man, what I want to do is I just want to get me six beers and sip them on the way to Birmingham. So I'd go up and down Sandy Plains Road where I live because I held trying to figure out a store to go in because I was afraid I'd run into my A buddies, you know. So I ended up going all the way down 92 in that little store down at Baxter's where the little golf driving range was. That's where I bought my last beer. You know what happened to me? I went in, and I swear this is true, that I started opening that cooler, and my hands would shake just like this. Amazing, amazing. But anyway, I bought 6 beers, and before I hit 285, I had to stop and get more. It was like heaven. It was like heaven to me. Unbelievable. And all that fear went away and all that anxiety went away. It was heaven to me. The only problem is I couldn't stop with the 6, you know. So I made it as far over as to Anniston, Alabama. And that's as far as I could drive, you know. And I checked into a motel over there called the Executive Inn. I've always wondered why they call that. It was $23.99 a night. And it was a horrible place. You know, we went over, we had to go to a funeral over in Birmingham a few months ago, and I made us pull off there and stop because I wanted to take a look at it, and I think there's a Chick-fil-A there now, where that place was. But anyway, I drank for 3 days, solid, 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 every single minute, and one night I decided, this is on Wednesday night, I said, this is it. So I poured out my booze, and I said, this is it. I wake up, come to about 4 o'clock on the next morning, I think, oh, God, I wonder why I poured that out. You know, I was, so I go over to a little 7-Eleven store, walk over, and stumble over. And I go over there, and I get me a 12-pack of beer, and I put it on the counter, and the guy says, I'm sorry, sir, he said, you can't buy beer here until 6 a.m. So I didn't make a bunch of people in the store, even at that time, 4 a.m., but a lot of truck drivers in there. So I didn't make a big to-do about it. I said, oh, no problem. So anyway, I go to my motel room, and I lay in that bed. And I had one of these cheap-ass digital clocks that flip over the minutes or something. So I sit there in that room and watch those minutes. Boom. Boom, and count the little holes in those ceiling tiles, and pace, and walk, and walk, and walk. And finally, I said, I can't handle it anymore. So I go back over, and I see not many people in the store, and I told the guy, I said, look, I said, I'm an alcoholic. I said, I got to have a drink. I said, and I remember this, I had $184 in cash. I said, hey, here's the money. And you give me a 12-pack of beer. And he said, look, he says, you know, I could lose my job. He said, I can't do that. He said, I'll tell you what I'll do. He said, where are you staying? I said, I'm staying right over there. He said, at 6 o'clock, he said, I'll bring you the beer to your room. You know, you don't have to worry about it. He said, but in the meantime, if you want me to call a minister or a doctor or your family, I'll be happy to do that for you. I said, don't call my family, you know. get over here getting my drunk ass, you know. And so anyway, the next night, something happened to me. I'm grateful it did. On February the 12th, I think the booze killed me. Because for some reason, I'm looking at, I always pour that beer and put it in that sink, right there in that little deal, you know, put the ice on it. And I looked over, had the closet here, no doors on the closet. And saw all my suits, silk ties, and starched shirts, and that I was going to take with me on the trip. And then I looked at me in the mirror, and I could see the guy that had on the same clothes he had Monday, hadn't taken a shower, hadn't shaved, shit coming out of his nose. And I'm saying, this is not what I'm all about. This over here, with the silk deal and the silk that, 100% cotton, that ain't what I'm all about. What I'm all about is what I see here. What I'm all about, I'm a drunk. I'm just a drunk. If something happened to me, I went over and I remember it like it was yesterday. I went over and got on my knees in the motel, by the bed, in that stinking motel room. I said, God, please help me. God, please help me. And you know what? I didn't see any burning bushes. I knew it was over. Knew in here it was over. I had a feeling I never felt before. I knew it was over. I knew the alcohol had killed me. It killed me. I'd given up. And I had tried so long to master the art. It killed me. Killed me. And I felt something like I'll never have to be back in one of these rooms again. Ever. Ever again, you know. I called some friends of mine. I called my buddy Sam Memory. And I called some friends of mine and said, I'm coming back home. Coming. They said, we'll come get you, you know. And I talked to this guy named Big Bob, and he was at my home group. He said, Dudley, you got any booze left? And I said, yeah. He said, pour it out. I went over and I poured it out. I'm so happy I poured it out. That's a great thing for him to tell me. Because, see, when I got up the next morning, it might have been too strong for me. I might have gone and had a drink, you know. But I poured it out, and I felt great. So let me tell you this. God started working in my life immediately. And next morning, I'm checking out of the motel room. There was this great guy. He was checking out of his room. And I feel like hell because I've been drinking 3 or 4 days. I'm hungover, but I feel good on the inside. And but this guy was a guy that you'd really want to meet. He looked like he had a great personality. He came by the front desk, and they all knew him. And he said, look, he said, I checked out of my room. But I went back to my room and made 2 local phone calls after I'd paid you guys. And so I just want to come in and pay you 50 cents or however much it is. And I'm thinking, boy, that's a nice thing to do because, hell, I've done that 1,000,000 times and never offered to pay, you know. And I'm saying, you know, that's a nice thing to do. And the guy just looked like he had it together, you know. And I go ahead and check out, and as I'm walking out of the hotel lobby to get in my car, I see the guy driving off in his truck, and he's from Oklahoma. And he had a bumper sticker on it, and it says, first things first, and one day at a time, on the bumper sticker. And I'm thinking, that was God sending me a message, Dudley, I'm going to ride with you. I'm going to ride with you back to Birmingham, or back to Marietta, you know, I'm going to ride with you. So many good things have happened to me. I was driving from Atlanta to Knoxville, and right after I got sober, and this was about the fall of 90, I guess, in like in October. I see all these beautiful, beautiful things, these trees, you know, all these beautiful colors, you know. Had places off the interstate where you kind of pull off that little scenic deal, and it was breathtaking to me. Breathtaking. I'd never seen it. It'd been years since I've seen anything. The leaves changed in the fall of the year. And I'm thinking, where did all this come from? Where did this come from? You know, the beauty of that, you know. And it was unbelievable. Let me tell you another story. I'm a storyteller, and then I got to close. But I'm driving to Lexington, Kentucky. Terrible drive in January. The damn roads are icy, and it's terrible. Those trucks passing you and sloshing that stuff all over your windshield. I'll tell you what I want to do. I just want to calm down. And the only way I knew to calm down, I'd been probably less than a year sober, is to drink. So I pulled off in a little town called Elizabethtown, I think it is, Kentucky. It's probably about 50 miles south of Louisville. I said, you know, this is a little bitty town. What I'm going to do is I'm going to stop. I saw a sign that said Days Inn. I had been told that if I get uncomfortable, I need to call my sponsor, and or I need to call somebody or check, see if there's a meeting somewhere. So I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go in there, and this town's so small, I'm going to go there and look in the phone book, and I know there's going to be an AA deal here, and then I'll just go and have me a few. I've done what I can do. So I go there, I look under AA, and I'll be damned. I had a number there, and I said, well, surely this is 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. There won't be anybody there. So I call, and this guy answered the phone. It was a clubhouse. And he says, where are you? I said, I am at Today's Inn on Everhart Road I was on. He said, well, what are you wearing? And I said, well, I have a red sweater. He said, well, come out the front door, look up to your right. We'll be waving at you on the porch, and this is a God's truth. That's a true story. Think it was a coincidence? I don't know. My late great friend Jimmy Egan says, you can have a God of miracles or you can have a God of no miracles. Jimmy Egan says, I want a God of miracles. I want a God of miracles too. You know, it's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. I failed to mention my sponsor. I did after I got into the program. I started doing the things that I was told to do. I got a sponsor immediately. I called him, and he said, let's get together and get to know one another. Immediately, I felt comfortable with him, where I could tell him everything about me, those things that I hid inside about my fears and that I've had all my life. And he's been with me for 13 and a half years. And our families are great friends. I have another buddy of mine. Let me tell you something else that happened to me. I was going to Highland Serenity, which is my home group. I just had started going there. This was about 89. And I met this guy. He had on a little suit. Shitty looking little guy, but he had on a suit. So he said, are you from around here? And I said, yeah, I live right up at Woodbine Station. He said, well, I live in Woodbine Station. And I said, well, I live on Brook Hill Circle. He said, well, I live on Brook Hill Circle. So we found out I live 4, 5, 6 houses. He lives 5, 6 houses down from me. And his name is Bo. We've been pretty much inseparable for about the last 13 and a half years also. He got where he'd drive up my street, and start off he'd blow the horn, wave his hand, and then he got where he'd stop. Then we became best buddies. And so we got about 4 guys. We got a buddy of ours named Woody. Woody's been sober 26 and a half years, and my sponsor's been sober 31 years. Bo's been sober for 18, and then there's Dudley for 13. I'm the baby. And they remind me, they tell me I don't know anything. And you know what? They're right. But... Anyway, a lot of wonderful things have happened to me. I, Let me just tell you one other little quick story. But I was about 1995. I was in the ladies' clothing business, and it just went to hell. It went to hell fast. You know, the big stores got bigger, the little stores were gone. So I started another business, and it had to do with like apartments, doing business with big apartment deals. And I always like to think big, and I was thinking, well, there's this big deal here in Atlanta called Post Properties, you know. So I called and called and called, and I mean, for months, and I couldn't even find out who I was even supposed to talk to. This guy said, oh, you need to talk to this guy, you need to talk to this guy, and, you know, I'm getting nowhere fast. One day I'm at Home Depot, and I'm walking down the aisle, this guy yells, hey, Dudley. So I turn around, and I said, who the hell is that? And I get to him, I recognize the guy. It's a guy that lived right next to me 18 years ago. It's been 18 years, we figured it out. And hadn't seen each other in 18 years, nor talked to each other in 18 years. And but we got to talking, and he said, are you still selling ladies' clothes? I used to sell his wife samples. And I told him no. I told him what I was doing. I said, Brent, what are you doing now? He said, I'm with Post Properties. And I said, are you kidding me? And you know what? If I had been 10 seconds early, 10 seconds late, I would have never run into Brent Borg, you know? And coincidence, I don't know. But it's kind of an amazing thing, isn't it? Kind of an amazing thing. So anyway, I want to end with this, and I didn't get all said I wanted to say, but I said enough. I said enough all you guys need to listen to. But let me just tell you this. I used to feel inadequate about telling my story, or in AA, because I think, what do I have to offer? Because my background of a chronic relapser is not very good. You know, it took me so long. What do I have to offer? And this is when they're talking about carrying the message and helping other drunks, you know. I was thinking, you know, what can I do? What can I do? And I've been sober about a year, and I was sitting by this guy at Gym City up on the square in Marietta. And I sat by him by accident. They called him Railroad Bob. His name was Bob Harmley, and he just passed away in the last year. Wonderful, one of the most wonderful people you ever meet in your life, a giant of a man, and a wonderful person. And he knew that I was a chronic relapser, but I'd been sober probably a year. And he was always a scribbler at meetings. He liked to write stuff down. And he wrote this on a piece of paper, and he gave it to me after the meeting, and it said this. It said, Dudley, it said, sometimes those people that have a tough time getting sober, parentheses, that is the chronic relapser, close parentheses, once he gets sober and stays sober, is able to help more people than the person that just comes in and never goes out again. You know what that did? I said, God, I have a purpose. I have a purpose. Maybe I can work with a relapser. You know, the people that have a tough time get connected. And today, when I see a guy and he's picking up those white chips, I'll go find him. I'll go find him. I'm going to tell you about one more miracle, and I'm closed. I have to tell you this. It's about stories. I'm going to show you something. And you can't see it from here. It's a guy, John. It's a little boy, Scott. Okay? Guy, John, and a little boy, Scott. About 2 years ago, I think last February, John came and wanted me to be his sponsor. He'd been in and out, in and out, in and out. He said, I'm willing to do it somebody else's way. So I said, John, call me every night at 9:30. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Call me every night at 9:30. He did it every single night. A lot of nights I wasn't there. I was working so late trying to get my business going. But he talked to my daughter, or he talked to my wife. After 3 months, he said, this is exactly what I need. I got so damn tired of hearing from him. He said, this is exactly what I need to get some discipline. And he said, I want to go for another 3 months. I said, oh, shit. So, but he did. But anyway, John did it the right. He went to those meetings. He got spot. He did exactly the right things. And the reason I want to show this baby, John and his wife Jan tried for 14 years to have a baby. 14 years. They went through all the tests that you do. They went to see this specialist. That's 14 years they tried to have a baby. And John gets sober. And little Scott is now 7 months old. Isn't that an amazing story? Is that a coincidence? I don't know. Maybe a miracle. He's 7 months old. Is that an incredible story? Is that an incredible story? You know what John says? He said, God knew that I wouldn't be a good Patty until I got sober. So anyway, I'm real happy to be here. There was a guy named John Indian. I promise you this is it. There's a guy named John Indian. He's from Boston. You guys ever heard him speak? He was wonderful. And John, the Indian, been sober 5 years, and still living in a Union Mission, having a tough time. And he goes to his sponsor, and he says, "Bill," he said, "I've been sober 5 years." He said, "I'm still living at the Union Mission. I don't have a car. I don't have a good job. I don't speak good English. I don't have a wife. I don't even have a girlfriend." And he said, "I've been sober 5 years. And his sponsor said, "John, there comes a time in your life where you have to begin right where you are. A time in your life where you have to begin right where you are." Hey, this has been fun for me. God bless you guys.
Thank you so much for sharing your